but if instead you gave them the capacity to see for themselves with the implications, the effect of where things were going, they had a very different experience. It also caused them to make projections onto other people that were damaging to others, and then therefore they became a source of breaking down the working of the organization. Missing
someone. Strengths drive innovation. Hey everyone, it's Matt here for another episode of Thinking Inside the Box, a show where we discuss complex issues related to work and culture. If you're interested in checking out our other content, you can find us at bentohr.com, wherever you find your favorite podcast by searching Thinking Inside the Box, and now in virtual reality, each Thursday at 5 p.m. Pacific Standard Time in AltSpace VR. In today's episode, I chat with Carol Sanford, a Seattle, Washington-based serial entrepreneur, author, speaker, and executive producer at the Regenerative Business Summit, an annual event held in Seattle meant to elevate and enrich conversation about regeneration and focus it on innovative, enlightened disruption in both business and industries. Carol's launched two startups, operated them, and then sold them, then turned her attention to teaching and educating businesses and its leaders globally. She brings a wealth of experience, knowledge, and strong opinions about the true value of feedback. She argues it's really not that valuable, which, I'll be honest, sparked an interesting and at times impassioned conversation that challenges some of our most deeply held beliefs. In the nearly 100 podcasts that I've recorded, this one definitely stands out, and I hope you enjoy it. And now I bring you Carol Sanford. Carol Sanford, I'm really looking forward to this conversation. We had a brief one just before I hit the record button, and I just could not wait another second. How are you doing today?
I'm great, Matt. Thank you for having me join you. I'm looking forward to it also.
Yeah, it's going to be a great conversation. And I'll be honest, Carol, like what stood out for me right off the bat, you've written five books, including one called No More Feedback. And I want to get into that. But before I get too excited and skip the normal course of action here, perhaps for those of us who don't know Carol Sanford, maybe walk us through your background, your experiences, and what brought you to today.
Well, I'm an old lady, so let's do a short version. I really work on helping corporations and individuals learn more about how consciousness can give them more guidance in their life, more ability to make a difference, to bring meaning, and to make life work generally. And I do that from an education platform, not a consulting or coaching. I do that through my own podcasts. I have three of them, a new Vimeo, our YouTube channel coming online, as you pointed out, five existing books, a new one coming. So I like to be on multiple platforms to have that conversation.
That's great. And it, obviously having multiple platforms gives your audience multiple different opportunities to connect with you in the way that makes the most amount of sense. I'm curious, what drew you to wanting to become an author and a writer? And, you know, of all the paths you could have chosen for your life, it seems like that one has really resonated with you.
Well, it's kind of a means, not an end. And I did not want to write. I was never a good English student, but my clients who were in big corporations, I kept saying, would you talk to this CEO and that CEO? And they said, Carol, write down our stories. We will tell them it's true. We will sign on testimonies, forward to your book. Please to make it more public. So I did the first one. And then the second one came about because I had small companies saying, well, that's all great for big companies, but what about us entrepreneurs? So I wrote one for the responsible entrepreneur after responsible business. And then people said, well, we need to know how you do that. And so I wrote a book called The Regenerative Business, because now my publisher would let me use the word regenerative, which I'd used for 45 years. And then the next one, people said, well, wait, you've got all these toxic practices in there. What do we do instead? And so I wrote No More Feedback, and I'm writing a few more to overcome the toxic practices. And then suddenly I needed one for individuals. So I never meant to be a writer. And I'm actually not. I'm an author, and I have a sneaky, tricky, really brilliant way of getting books written.
Okay, well, now I have to know that. we'll talk about that offline, because as somebody who has been saying I should write a book for probably 5 years now, Carol, it's just one of those things I'm sure you can appreciate. I never seem to find the time to sit down and put my thoughts together. So yeah. If you've got hacks, we need to connect about this offline.
Unfortunately, no one else can use it when I use. One of my clients agrees to let me dictate, and he's a great editor. And so he edits as we go, but he won't do it for anybody else. But find someone who can do that. So I verbally wrote the book.
Oh, wow.
I had the whole outline, everything in my hand, and I talked it, and he typed it up.
That's fantastic.
It's not ghostwriting. Because it's all my thinking.
Yeah.
So go do that, Matt.
Okay. If anyone listen to this podcast, if you would love to listen to me read out my book aloud and write it out for me, please get in touch with me across all social media channels. I love the idea, though. I've certainly applied some of that, Carol. I mean, I've done voice notes to myself, and then I've transcribed those voice notes and done that for parts of previous passages for articles. I love, I was talking to somebody yesterday who's a tech entrepreneur, and in the business that they work, they are a big believer in video messages. So they, rather than sending texts back and forth, they send videos back and forth, which I wanted to poke at and prod at, because I'll be honest, like, I've been in the business world now for over 20 years, and certainly video messages back and forth were not something that existed when I began in the corporate climb. That being said, there's science behind the fact that video communication allows us to more efficiently, both from the sender, but also from the receiver, communicate information. So I'm not surprised to hear that you found a really good hack around, you know, if you will, transcribing your words, because that would be so much more effective than you writing them down, sending them to an editor who edits them in text, sends them back to you for revisions, back to the editor. Like, that's what takes so long when you're writing books, is just, you know, beyond just the core brainstorming, it's the back and forth, back and forth, back and forth.
And my books are so easy to read. They're all bestsellers. And that's because if you do what you're good at and you engage others, and I did pay people to help me, so sure, you're going to have to pay, Matt, it makes a better experience for everyone in the same way you just described with video.
Yeah. Oh, totally right. And you, of course, you're going to pay people. You want to pay people and respect their time and all that good stuff. I'm curious, Carol. I mean, one of the reasons why I reached out and wanted to connect was, you know, the book No More Feedback. And as somebody who spent close to 20 years in the HR profession, designing performance management programs, thinking about coaching, thinking about mentorship, all of those, you know, various vehicles are predicated on the assumption that, one, feedback is being provided, and two, that it's well received. First off, maybe talk to me a bit about No More Feedback. What was the impetus for the book, and what were some of the things that you learned along the way in writing it?
Well, I learned a lot of what I knew about No More Feedback from my doctoral research, because I personally, and I'm going to want to hear your opinion on this, how effective you thought feedback was for you personally. But what I discovered was that it promotes all the worst things you can possibly imagine. And I did it by actual research in the field with kids, when you gave them feedback versus you ask them what they thought, what they saw, how they could get better, and how much faster they grew and how much more present they were. So then I started doing it with clients inside companies, and the process unfolded over time where I was able to articulate a series of downsides. Like, the majority of feedback belongs to the person giving it, not the person receiving it. Big article in Psychology Today that showed that. Second thing was, it shut down people's ability to see themselves and to trust their own lived experience, which meant they no longer actually could image how to make something happen, but if instead you gave them the capacity to see for themselves with the implications, the effect of where things were going, they had a very different experience. It also caused them to make projections onto other people that were damaging to others, and then therefore they became a source of breaking down the working of the organization. So those were three of the things I found along the way. I am curious, though, about in your role, what was your own experience of how effective feedback was with you?
Yeah, it's a good question. I would say it evolved over time, Carol, to be honest. Early in my career, I really craved feedback of all kinds. And to the point where I was probably a bit obnoxious about it, asking my coaches and my mentors and my peers and my clients, like, how am I doing? I've always felt a bit of, and I'm sure people can identify with this, a bit of imposter syndrome. And I always felt like the roles that I was in, I was growing into as I assumed them. So I was very thoughtful about trying to collect as much feedback as possible from people on how to do that. What I didn't realize at the time, Carol, that I've since realized is that how important just asking for help is in relationship building. And I now use that much more effectively in a number of contexts, maybe in some cases where I don't even need to know a specific answer to a question, but just the very act of going to somebody and saying, hey, I'd love to have your help on this, is a really great way to break ice and to build relationships. So that's evolved. And feedback for me has taken on a different purpose as I've matured in my own career, my own leadership style, but my approach to giving it probably hasn't changed that much. I'm the kind of person, Carol, that I love direct feedback. I don't take feedback terribly personally. So from that perspective, I try and give that same experience to the people that I work with. But it sounds like your research indicates that people may not always be open to getting feedback. It may not be the most effective way in achieving a different outcome.
No, the actual opposite is true. Everybody wants feedback, but it's based on what you just demonstrated, which is because they don't trust their own opinion. And because we're raised that way with parents, with education. So, for example, I taught my children from a really young age to never ask me how they were doing. They can ask me for help. That's a whole different thing than feedback. Feedback means I see you better than you see you, and I know what you should do about it. And I'm going to say it in as nice a way as I can and hope you can hear it. So that's what I mean by feedback. What's better to do is what I did with these 9-year-old boys in my first research and with my own kids is I had them set a goal or a target or something they wanted to achieve. And then I asked them how they were doing and how they could do it better. But I also asked them, what did you notice about yourself? What did you notice about when you got nervous? What did you notice about when you were afraid? What did you notice about when you started to make up a story so that you'd feel okay? And I never gave them my answer to those questions. And my kids, by the time we were 6 years old, didn't have a problem with peer pressure. They didn't have the problem with trying to figure out what others thought about them. And they were not lying in order to make me think a certain thing. So what I know is if you start from a very young age, people learn not to ask. Now, there are ways inside businesses, but that's another subject, where you can set up how teams are working to have conversations that move the whole forward.
Yeah, I love that. I love the fact that it's a shared responsibility around moving the whole forward. That's just, I think it's a great microcosm for what's happening right now. And, you know, Carol, obviously we've all been through a shared experience over the last 18 months to 2 years. And of course, different people have experienced those last 2 years differently, depending on your circumstances and level of privilege and where you're located and all those various, you know, the career path you've chosen, among other variables. I'm curious, has the last 2 years in any way shaped or reshaped or refined how you view the idea of feedback? Has it given you pause in terms of some of your earlier thoughts and methodologies?
No, I keep doing the research, and everything I do shows that it comes off the world of machines, that what you want to do is build capacity for individual consciousness, not get better at doing feedback. So the story about how it came into, because you were a human resource professional at one point, this will be intriguing to you. The where feedback came from was when the schools of psychology in the 50s and 60s wanted to be seen as a science. they joined something called the Macy Conference, and it was sponsored by Macy's company, looking at how we could use science to improve lives. When the presentations on artificial intelligence, which you're also connected to, were demonstrating how it is that it's very scientific. You can use feedback in a machine to help control what people can see, what they can do. The psychologists jumped on the idea of feedback and incorporated it into their practice. It came off the idea of machines. Feedback means a governor is on something that you need to stop an overflow, for example, hot oil or something. The feedback mechanism is to shut something down. That metaphor should tell us everything we need to know about not shutting people down, because it does, even if you can't tell it. But the psychologist, in adopting it, started teaching it, never looking or studying for probably 40 years the effect and why there are so much better, unbelievably better methods that fit more how humans work. They don't do well by being shut down. In fact, they go underground with the shutdown, is what I say.
Hey, everyone, it's Matt here, and I hope you're enjoying today's discussion. Before we continue, I want to make you aware of our latest creative project, HR in VR. Every Thursday at 5 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, I'll connect with technology pioneers, business executives from the world's most iconic brands, and industry thought leaders to discuss the future of immersive technologies like virtual reality and their impact on future workplaces. In partnership with Microsoft, we're broadcasting each episode on LinkedIn Live and in front of a live studio audience in AltSpace. Joining is easy. For LinkedIn users, simply follow my account, MattInVR, and stay tuned Thursdays at 5 p.m. Pacific Standard Time for the LinkedIn live stream. Or for a truly immersive live experience, visit altvr.com to download AltSpace on your Mac, PC, or VR headset, and join us live in our studio audience. There you'll have a chance to ask questions, meet me and our incredible guests, and connect with others from the comfort of your own home. This is the future, folks, and I hope you'll be part of it. And I'll link the details for HR and VR, along with all other relevant information, in the show notes of this podcast. And now, back to our discussion.
So I have not rethought it except to feel more vigorous about giving people the alternatives. I created a whole podcast around it called Business Second Opinion, where I have people send me something, an article out of Harvard Business Review, and I give a second opinion. 90% of them are on HR practices that are things that people didn't feel good about, didn't work for them, or want to know what to do instead. So that's what I have done with all the energy of probably the last 5 years.
So what was the name of the podcast again, Carol?
Business Second Opinion is mine. It's the one I produce, and it's what we call the on-air talent, like you.
Well, clearly talent, of course. Clearly talent.
Yes, of course.
So folks, check that out. I'm super curious to check that out after this podcast, because, you know, to your point, Carol, I mean, as an HR practitioner, I've always felt a degree of confidence in knowing that I'm going to have job security the rest of my life.
Right.
But to your point, I'm now second guessing whether or not, while good intentioned, if my past approaches around both soliciting and also providing feedback are really in the best interest of the broader picture. And I'm going to definitely check those cases out, maybe to bring it to life a little bit. Can we use a very simple example and maybe talk that through together?
Sure.
Okay. So let's just say, for example, we have an employee. Let's just say it's me, because it's probably me in a lot of cases. I'm late for things. So I'm consistently 10 minutes late for every meeting, including the important meetings with clients or with, you know, team members. And, you know, my gut instinct would say, okay, we need to bring Matt in for a conversation. We need to sit him down and have a chat and explain to him that, you know, one, we've noticed the tardiness. Two, inquire about what could be some of the root causes for tardiness, because there could be some mitigating factors. Maybe there's traffic issues. Maybe there's some things at home that are happening. Maybe it's a bus schedule misalignment, but we dig into root causes. And then presuming that there are no mitigating root causes, we would then have a conversation around helping me understand the consequences of my action relative to the impact on others. And then I would ask for a commitment from me to try and be more on time going forward. How does that approach fit into what you have found in terms of research, and how would you change it, if at all?
So you have the wrong culture and the wrong work design if that's the level and the timing which you're working on it.
Correct.
I would never start there. What I do is redesign work systems so they're like, I'm going to give you the example of my children again, where starting when they were 6 years old, I asked them to pick something they really wanted to make work better for the family, knowing that they would make a mess of it at the beginning. But the whole process of creating a culture where every person contributes and works on themselves, then what is what's core. Then what we do is I start talking with them about, well, how are you going to try that out? What's your plan going to be? Because I have to build a capability. What you did is did a behavioral intervention. Behavioral interventions are based on study of rats, that if you get the right incentives, rewards, the right way of doing it, you can change them. I don't believe in behavioral because I believe we are not rats, unless you manage rats, of course. But what I do with my kids is we laid out how they were going to do it. They designed it. I might have said, well, would you try this? Would you try that? But none of it was prescriptive or feedback. They would lay out a plan every Sunday night. And by the way, I do this on a large scale with corporations, but it'll sound differently. We sat on Sunday night and I said, well, how did your plan work that you laid out for this week? And how is it getting toward the larger thing you want to do? And how do you think it's affecting the family? So if you look at that set of questions, I'm teaching people to be reflective of their own ability to lead and change something. And then we would figure out, well, what are you going to do next week? But I always would ask them about themselves. How are you feeling about doing this? And even a six-year-old can say, well, I'm worried you're going to be mad. And I'd say, why in the world would you worry about that? Well, I don't know. I feel like I'm doing it wrong. I said, are you mad at you? So all of it, I'm going back into teaching them how to see themselves. Then along the way, I say, what do you think is getting in your way? That's kind of a pattern that you need to work on. So in the case of your person, if my kid said it, they might say, well, I'm always late. I come in running at the last minute to do it. Ah, okay. Well, how could you work on that? So they design a plan. They take off working on a Sunday night dinner. How did your plan to not always be doing last minute work? Well, I wasn't very good. Aha, so you weren't happy. No, not yet. Well, what would you do next week? Well, set an aim. So I'll escalate the level of capability, not the level of intervention as I work. That, I think, I'm trying to do it in a child terms because what I do in a company is so much more complex. They get set up. But the principle is the same. It's about capability, not behavior. What do you think of that?
Yeah, I love that. I think that's a really nice repositioning of a traditional approach to problems. And I think you're right. I think the behavioral approach that a lot of people employ does set a different tone for the relationship, which is really hard to repair. And the one thing I always struck with that environment is that that intervention that I kind of played out for you is obviously a last case type of an intervention, but it comes with some consequences in terms of the social currency that you have to expend to do that. And I like your approach better because it puts the empowers the individual much more, and it feels a lot less dictatorial and much more collaborative, ultimately where we want to get to.
It enables, not empowers. Enables is a core here. There is some empowerment, but enablement means you build capability. It doesn't do you any good to have to, I don't start with the problem ever. I never have the thought about start with they're late. What that tells me immediately is we've got a bad cultural design, but we have no infrastructure for development. Mm. So what, not only with my kids, was I doing something different, which you're focusing on in the moment, but I had in place a whole infrastructure about how you raise children and what my role is. And I had Sunday night meetings. And if in between one of the kids came to me, my son took on feeding us when he was 9, and we nearly starved to death. But I didn't say, well, let me take the bag and you pick something easier. My infrastructure was my whole family, and my parenting is about building capability of people to be self-determining and self-contributing to a larger whole, and that we're building capability for them to do that, and they find things that are in their way. I don't find problems they have with serving the family.
As you look at the future, Carol, I'm just curious. We are in the hopefully live later stages of this worldwide pandemic. As we record this, the Delta variant is moving throughout the world. Having said that, vaccination rates are also rising in a lot of developed countries. And while behind, less developed countries are also beginning to vaccinate their populations. I'm curious, for you, how do you see the next few years for yourself? You know, how do you see that affecting both professionally, but also personally? Do you, have you given any thought to what the next few years might be like?
Well, yeah, because I'm an old lady, so you do that. But not in terms of those things. They're just stuff. Pandemic is stuff. I look at what capability is missing that has people not to be able to see the systemic effect. So I go back more to teaching people about how to see their effects in the world and how to see their own behavior and how to be more discerning. And so I'm about to start a YouTube channel because I believe there are my young millennials, my members of my communities are increasingly young. So I'm filled with 20 and early 30, maybe four up to 40 years old. And I feel like that what people need is so different than what's in the education system and in the parenting system and in the work system. And so I'm creating a parallel education path, and I'm creating a number of platforms and membership programs so people come inside and they learn a very different way to structure it so we don't have a next pandemic. We can actually deal with climate change, because I don't think if we work on those directly, trying to change people's minds, we do anything but make things worse. And so my whole life is about educating people to see themselves, bring their own consciousness to something, and change how they discern and decide what to take on in the world.
Love that. One topic that we discussed off air that I thought was really important to bring on air was, you asked me about my approach to the podcast and my approach to business. And I mentioned to you that one of the things we're trying to do here on Thinking Inside the Box is we try and make the complex simple. We try and take really complex concepts and distill them down to digestible pieces so that people can either, one, ingest them, but also apply some of the learnings in their lives. And you said you like that, but actually your methodology is you're looking to make the complex essential. Maybe talk a bit about that.
Yeah, but everything you just said is part of the problem. When we break things down into pieces, we no longer can see the whole, and we don't build the capability to see the dynamics, which is what makes it complex. And so we try and dumb things down to the current mind we've got. So we move the subject matter, the conversations down to the current way we can deal with stuff, which is one or two parts of something very complex. I teach people how to see the heart of something. So when you said to me, what do I do with this person who is late all the time? You're dealing with a fragment, something people have simplified it, and they'll give you a quote hack, which my new TV show is the Regenerative Life Hacks, which are more how to hack from a systems level. If we can't move people's capability to see the dynamics and the complexity and then zero in where not the part that I want to understand, but what intervention, it's like acupuncture. If you've had acupuncture, you can work on one point with one or two needles and you can get the whole system to reset. That is what I mean by essential. It's essence thinking rather than fragmented and then reorganization thinking.
That makes a ton of sense. And I I love podcast guests that make me think about the way things are done differently. And I want to thank you, Carol, for just bringing a new concept, several new concepts to the discussion, because it's causing me to take a step back and reflect upon my worldview and how I approach previous challenges and how I'm going to approach future challenges. While I don't want to ask you to distill everything that you've done down to, you know, one key point, maybe I'll ask the question a different way, which is, what is one challenge that you see coming up over and over again that people make that's a simple mistake, or a simple, with a simple switch or a simple refocusing, we can be more effective with the people in our lives? So what's one thing that you give us, maybe as a tip or an advice?
My first thing is just stop asking that question. And let me tell you why. Everybody wants a one thing, and it's from a fragment. Give me one thing I can do. So I'm going to give you one thing.
Yeah.
Go build the mind that asks questions about what is the level of rethinking we need to do, starting in a different place. Like, don't ask me what you should do tomorrow. Don't ask me for one thing you can go do, because it means you're asking me to move what would really work for you, what would make your mind amazing, make you a great change maker, down to something you can do, but it doesn't have much meaning. So don't look for takeaways. Look for the idea of, where could I get curious and build more capability? And then we can all work on what makes the world work.
I absolutely love that. Carol, thank you so much for the conversation today. Folks, if you're interested in learning more about Carol, I'll list all of her details in the comment section of the podcast. I'll also link several copies of her books in there as well. Check those things out. Carol, I've taken away a ton from this conversation. Thank you so, so much, sincerely, for your insights, your perspective, your candor. And I just want to wish you really well in the future and hope we can stay in touch.
Thank you, Matt. I really enjoyed it. You're a great, great person to play with ideas with.
Well, yeah, I appreciate that very much, and we'll talk again real soon.
All right.
At Bento HR, we enable your HR strategy with custom HR technology procurement, implementations, and integrations to liberate your team from administration, enhance their productivity and experience, to position them at the center of your organization's transformation, where they belong. With experience as an HR executive myself, I have a real appreciation of the challenges facing today's HR leaders. The world is changing. Your industry is being disrupted. Your organization is transforming. And all the while, you're trying to do more with less. You're being asked to simultaneously model fiscal restraint while the expectations of your departments are only increasing. At Bento HR, we can support you at every stage of your transformation. From architecting the strategy to developing and selling the business case internally, we support procurement, implementations, and ongoing sustainment. And we tie it all together with a deep knowledge of the HR profession and over 6 decades of combined experiences from our founding team, who has worked in or supported large HR organizations across multiple industries, including, but not limited to, financial services, technology, retail, transportation, and healthcare. Check out Bento HR today to build your very own Bento box, which doubles as your business case for transformation. Leveraging recent research into the upside of digital automation inside organizations, and with your help in answering a few simple questions related to your organization, our Bento Builder will provide a directional business case for change. So log on to www.bentohr.com and build your Bento box today.